set. Please be attentive. It is February the 9th, 2011. For the record, I'm Charles Chandler, presiding officer in the FRM hearings, so-called as pursuant to orders of the New Hampshire Secretary of State, dated October 5th, 2010. We're continuing with this process. Before we get to our first witness today, Attorney Forcier or Attorney Spill, do we have any preliminary matters?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chandler. I have Mr. Robert Fairman's deposition that you asked for, and I did confirm with the SEC that there is no issue of making this document public.
And that deposition has been signed under oath. Is that correct? You've confirmed that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm going to accept that into evidence as item, I believe, 111.
I also have for you both of Susan Ferrer's depositions, and both were in fact signed, and I included the signature page.
Okay. And I will accept.
They've already been marked as 107.
They were marked before we confirmed that they had in fact been under oath. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you've now confirmed that they're under oath.
Yes, sir.
And that confirmation came from?
Debbie Nogner.
Okay. And that is 107.
I've also got for you Frank Marino's court documents that you requested.
Oh, excellent.
The one that there were some holes in it. I think these holes have been filled, so they're all here.
The missing pages in the original writ.
Yes, sir.
Did we have any of that marked before? I don't believe we did because of the missing pages.
I think you noticed it right away, and I don't think we marked it.
Let's mark the Marino versus Hildreth in the state of New Hampshire as 112.
Lastly, I also have an email from Mr. Marino that I think would aid you in understanding what he sent to Michelle Kelleher in February 09. It's a snapshot of the website that he provided to her. I think this would help shed some light when you read his affidavit.
It's an affidavit.
No, this is the document that I got that would accompany the affidavit for your review. It'll show it's an email from Mr. Marino to Ms. Michelle Kelleher of Banking, and it just says provided here is a snapshot of the email if you're unable to open it. So
I am not prepared to introduce that into evidence because I'm loath to introduce anything via email. I will review it, and if I find it of any probative value to overcome the email impediments, I may then enter it. But again, explain to me what this is going to do for me.
It'll just give you an example of what banking had in February of 2009 in their possession as far as the website snapshot, and it also provides the email key code to enter the online loan opportunities website. This is how Mr. Marino communicated to banking, the loan opportunity website, and it provided here his password, and then if she's unable to use the password, he provided a snapshot of what you would see if you were able to enter the loan opportunity website.
And this purports to be an email from him to you?
No, this is an email from him to Michelle Kelleher of banking. And I can get this signed affidavit by Mr. Marino if that's any necessary. I'm sure he would do that. He provided this to us just so we can provide it to you so you could see what he emailed banking. I don't think he would have any problem getting it in the affidavit form.
I'll review it, and then I may wish to have it in affidavit form.
Okay.
I'm not going to mark it at this point in time. Attorney Spill, anything else preliminarily?
Yes, sir.
Is that it, Attorney Forcier?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Michelle, I do have one thing before. I've got the exhibit list. Before I leave today, I'd like to have a copy of Exhibit 105.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. There being nothing else, I'm prepared to call the first witness for the day, and that would be Mary Jurt. Good morning, Ms. Jurt.
Good morning.
Are you a member of the New Hampshire Bar?
No, I'm not an attorney.
Okay. You're a CPA, if I recall. Okay. That having been said, you understand that this proceeding is under oath?
Yes.
Okay. Would you raise your right hand, please? You solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give, and the matter now pending will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes.
Okay. And for the record, would you state your name, spelling your last name?
Mary Jurta, J-U-R-T-A.
Ms. Jurta, any person who has testified in this process, and be aware that the rules of evidence don't apply, I have given an opportunity to read a prepared statement if they have a prepared statement, or to speak extemporaneously if they wish to. You're under no obligation to do either. If you don't have a prepared statement, or if you don't wish to speak extemporaneously, we can move into the right directly into questioning.
May I reserve that right till the end?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Attorney Forcey or Attorney Spill?
I'll be posing the questions.
Attorney Spill.
Good morning.
Morning.
Mr. Chair, can I call you Mary?
Please. We've known each other a long time.
Thank you. Thank you for coming here this morning. Could you briefly go over your work history with respect to the state of New Hampshire?
I started with the state of New Hampshire in 1987, hired as a securities examiner, replacing somebody who had just left. The department, or the bureau, was then in the insurance department. So I worked in the insurance department for a period of time, probably about 8 or 9 months. During that legislative session, it might have even been the prior one anyway, there had been a couple of scandals in the state of New Hampshire revolving around securities. They decided to move the department out onto its own, to kind of stand alone away from insurance, hire some, you know, kind of management type people and make it a little more of an enforcement power. So in 1988, we moved kind of a little bit across the way from insurance and became an agency of our own, but administratively attached to the insurance department. I worked for probably about a year and then was named, might have been a year and a half, the administrator of securities filings. As an examiner, I had been involved in doing examinations of broker-dealers and investment advisors and issuer-dealers, and as administrator of securities filings, it was still a very small agency, about the size it is now, and I was in charge of doing the day-to-day review and analysis and comments on securities offerings, both exemptions and registrations, being done, filed with the Bureau. In 1991, they, in kind of a political move basically, they dissolved the department completely. Most of the personnel were rehired, some were not, by the Attorney General. The functions were split between the Attorney General and the Secretary of State. The following year, in 92, they were recombined. When they were split, enforcement was supposed to be on the Attorney General side, and all of the administrative work was being done, and the review work was being done on the Secretary of State side. Went back together again in 92. Basically, I was hired. When I was hired back, I was not hired. I had been in an unclassified position. I was hired back as a financial research analyst. That there was myself and another accountant, and that was a classification that they had going at the AG's office that they felt was appropriate. And so we were hired back in that capacity. And I stayed in that capacity, continuing to do securities filings. When the other accountant left, I moved over to the licensing function and did that for quite a while, oversaw all the licensing of those individuals and entities regulated by the department and by the Bureau. And then at the very end, the year before I left, in 2002, November of 2002. And about a year prior to that, they had bumped up, I forgot what the title was, but it was a one pay grade up type of thing, but my duties didn't change. So I basically, also during that period of time, the whole period of time actually, we had some enforcement people in and out, but for a big chunk in the middle, I was writing a lot of the enforcement orders as well as the interpretive orders that went along just simply because nobody else was there. It wasn't because it was any great job, it was because it needed to be done. And that, oh, I moved over, sorry, to banking in 2002 and was put in charge of the consumer credit division in a newly established position that is generally a very young industry, regulating quite a variety of different types of licensees. And my function, besides managing the people, you know, that administered it, was to try to get, you know, the laws in place and so forth, and try to bring some semblance of organization and symmetry to the functioning, so that when you licensed a mortgage broker, you would use similar type of forms, asking different questions for a sales finance company and things like that. Just trying to bring some organization structure and some meat into the law as well, because they had things in the law, for instance, where if you violated the chapter, you could be issued a cease and desist order, and if you violated the cease and desist order, it was a violation of the chapter. So we put in abilities to fine, and you know, it was basically you could either revoke a license or nothing. There were no fining abilities and things like that. So, you know, using a lot of the security statute, actually, we beefed it up.
With respect to financial resources, and particularly CLNM, which I understand came into being in June of 2005, what did you understand were securities related to mortgages? What did you believe to be securities related to the mortgage activity up there?
In 2005, I didn't believe anything.
How about after the collapse? Did you formulate an opinion then, or was it before the collapse?
No, it would have been, well, I was suspicious again because, of course, I had been with you up there in 2001, 2002, when they were issuing unregistered securities, and I knew a order had issued from there. In 2006, it hit the paper again, and it was a securities issue. It sure looked like it. And so I knew they had issues then. And when I got an email from Peter Roth asking, well, actually, the email was to Deputy Fleury, who forwarded it to me, and it was basically asking, say, take a look at this. I think something's wrong here. Now, he didn't give us any depth or explanation or anything else, but at the behest of the deputy, I looked at it, and I clicked, actually, on his link on the email, and it opened up this list of investment opportunities related to various projects, commercial, some out of state, I think residential. But they were looking for, you know, minimum investment $50,000, need to raise $500,000, need to raise $1 million, minimum investment $100,000. To me, every time I see a fractional share of something, basically, it smacks of a security. So, I actually was out of the office for a period of time right after that interchange, and when I got back, I wrote a letter to, I think it was to FRM, but it went to Gallagher as well. It might have been directly to Gallagher and law firm who represented FRM and said, you know, I think you may have some issues here. It looks like investments are basically to me. Contact the Securities Bureau was my indication. And by the way, if you're doing any of these yourself, you need to be licensed as a mortgage loan originator. I believe that was a substance. I don't have it in front of me.
Could you suspend for just a second, mm-hmm. Mrs. Bill? As I recall, an interview you did with the Attorney General's office, and I'm trying to recall it, in there, I believe that I remember you were a certified public accountant. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm inactive at this point because I haven't been practicing at all. So,
when did you become a CPA?
I believe it was 88 or 89. Okay. 1988 or 1989.
Mm-hmm. when you were dealing with securities, you were...
Yes, okay. Yes.
Well, Mr. Spill, please.
You had a chance to look at your DOJ statement that was
yes.
taken in April of 2010.
Yes, I did. Just recently, thank you.
That document is 11 pages long. Can you tell us what aspects of this, if any, of this statement are inaccurate, something that you did not say that you were attributed as saying?
I think all the way through, it's, I mean, you had two people asking me rapid-fire questions for a period of 2 days. And Mr. Marshall was, you know, making notes like crazy. I think the overall impression of what they did is very accurate. But there are certain things in there that definitely are not, and it's almost like they tried to give a little background to what was happening. I can give you an example on page 8. One, two, three, four. The fifth paragraph down. It reads, during 2006, the legal department was very busy and active. Likewise, the request for continuance, as evidenced by a letter dated March 6, 2006, further delayed proceedings. An email dated March 9, 2006, from Todd Wells to Michael Burke, attorney for FRM, confirms the continuance and sets a deadline of 30 days for the settlement or hearing, or the settlement or hearing will be rescheduled. I had absolutely no knowledge. I'm not even sure I knew Todd Wells was a hearing officer. It's just, I'm sure this is very accurate, but it certainly isn't words that came out of my mouth. And I think that that's kind of woven through here. I know Jeff asked me about the last page.
Would you mind reading that last paragraph?
Sure.
Or the last two paragraphs?
If CLNM had been investigations, violations may have been found, but they would have been of securities laws, not of banking laws. FRM looked like a commercial enterprise that was engaged primarily in commercial loan brokering activities. When banking heard that FRM closed, it sent several people to its offices, including Mr. Hildreth, to review records. Mr. Hildreth found packets of materials for soliciting investors and sent those packets to Mr. Connolly. The banking examiner said the records were of securities transactions. Ms. Gerda also looked at the FRM website, and to her, the investment, solicitations looked like securities. Sales, fractional interests and trusts, even if exempt from securities laws, were subject to state anti-fraud provisions and were subject to federal securities laws. The residential loans regulated and reviewed by the banking department were not fraudulent. Okay, one, that's a conclusion. We didn't see any fraud, would have been my statement. We certainly never sent Mr. Hildreth anywhere. I would be very hard-pressed to send a commissioner, I believe. He did find, was related to me, this is hearsay, that he found packets of materials for soliciting investors and that he sent them to Mr. Connolly. I understood that as well, but only from somebody else telling me. The banking examiner said the records were of securities transactions. That the banking examiners would have absolutely no way of making that determination. Could have been something Peter Hildreth indicated to them. I'm not sure where that came from, because they honestly wouldn't know.
Would you mind if I took this line by line?
Sure. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I thought I was.
That's okay.
I'm sorry if I'm doing a job.
This is going to be important.
Okay.
The Bureau. Mr. Hildreth, when you said that somebody told you that Mr. Hildreth found packets, do you know who that person was that told you that?
I believe it was Mr. Hildreth, and I think it was the examiners as well. Over some course of time, I mean, obviously, there's an awful lot of conversations that would have been duplicative over a period of time regarding FRM in general. But I know that had come up several times during the discovery thing. I think Mr. Hildreth gave whatever he had copies of to our general counsel. And at some point, I know I was looking for them to see exactly what they looked like, because I never saw them, other than at the meeting that you were at with me, with the U.S. Attorney's Office and the AG's office. I believe it was in November.
Of 2009.
Where Mr. Hildreth brought that packet with him, and Mr. Gunnison, who's a senior U.S. Assistant attorney over at the...
Can I stop you there? Because I want to go back. And then we'll get to that. I heard you say that the bank examiners did not say that the records were of securities transactions.
No, not to my memory or recollection, no. But it certainly might have been that somebody at some point said, Peter said they were, or Peter took them because he thought they were securities related, or something like that. But I wouldn't have ever testified that any of our securities examiners would have known what to look at for a security or investment. And I think when you guys came over to look at our records, I said that. I said, you know, I don't think there's anything securities related in all of this mass of records. Because to my knowledge, I think the only ones I thought that were things that Peter picked up, and perhaps evidence on the web. Excuse me, Commissioner Hildreth, I apologize. But I said, but our securities examiners wouldn't know what to look for anyway if it was, you know, to find, do you think this particular document is a security? They wouldn't know.
What was the first time that you saw something that you thought was a security related to a mortgage?
It would have been the website, the day I looked at the website.
So that would have been in September of 2009?
September of 2009.
Okay. Did you actually, the packets that's quoted here, did you actually see one of those?
The only time I caught a glimpse of them was when Mr. Gunnison, at that meeting in November, was looking at them and said, oh my gosh, these read exactly like a company called American Financial Advisors that we had shut down with the U.S. Attorney's Office out of Bedford. And Mike Gunnison made the recollection, oh my gosh, these look like the exact same type of investment offerings as we've seen this before, as in American Financial Advisors. That's the closest I ever got, actually, because I didn't see them. I didn't talk to him about them. I did find out after the fact that apparently he had them scanned in and sent to Mr. Connolly. He felt, obviously, I think probably, I don't want to speak for him, but it was important that securities was aware of them. And as far as I know, he gave that entire piece of file evidence or whatever, besides showing it to that day at a meeting with the U.S. Attorney's Office and the AG Securities and us, he gave it to Celia Leonard, and I never saw it again.
Okay. So you wouldn't know that if those packets are still at banking at this time?
No, but I would assume they were. I would assume they were part of the discovery thing. The whole, they've got to be out there already. They have to be scanned and everything else out there.
And those packets that may be at banking would be the ones that Mr. Hildreth took?
Yes. I believe so. Now, as I said, I'm removed. Maybe I shouldn't be guessing. But.
Okay. So you're not aware of any other packets other than the ones that Mr. Hildreth took?
No.
Okay. Now, just to clarify, Mr. Gunnison is an attorney, an assistant U.S. attorney with the federal government?
Yes, he is.
And you also mentioned a meeting at the Department of Justice for the state of New Hampshire. You said that Mr. Hildreth brought the packet there?
Yes.
Did you see it then?
That's the closest I got to it was when he was showing it to Mr. Gunnison. And I remember...
The New Hampshire Department of Justice?
Yes, that's where this meeting was held. We didn't go over to the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Okay, I see.
They came there.
So this would have also been shown to some of the... Assistant Attorney General.
Everybody who was there at that meeting. And
what was the bureau
I can't,
there?
Yes.
Okay. What was shown, okay, let me answer that question. What was shown was what Mr. Hildreth brought back from that file.
That's my understanding.
And do you think that's what he sent to Mr. Connolly?
Yes, I do. But again, it's my understanding. I didn't send it to him and I didn't see it, but that's my understanding that whatever he saw, whatever was in that packet, he felt significant enough he wanted to make it known.
I would like to show her what Mr. Connolly received. And from her testimony, she has stated that she hasn't seen it.
You're going to show something to her for purposes of refreshing a recollection?
She testified she has never seen it before, so I'd like her like her to review it so I can ask her some questions about it.
Please do. The rules of evidence don't necessarily apply here, and
but if I don't have personal knowledge, then,
you just testify as truthfully.
And I have, this is the email that Mr. Hill was sent to Mr. Conley on November 16, 2009, and these were the attachments.
You're representing to Mary Gerda that that's the email, and you're representing that those are the attachments, and based on those representations, you want to ask her some questions. Is that correct?
Yes.
Proceed.
Would you like to look on?
Yeah, if you have a set. Thank you.
I can verify I never saw this. No, I've never seen these. I can tell you the top one looks like what I saw on the website, one of many of the kind of descriptions and picture of a property.
Can you say the top?
This top one is right here with the, blacked out.
The first line is Financial Resources Mortgage, Inc., and it talks about a lending opportunity in Jacksonville, North Carolina. Is that the document you're referring to?
Yes.
And you're saying that this is, you think this is something you have seen or something like this?
This is the type of thing, of offering that I saw on the website, which then I also kind of went, my gosh, this is out to the public, because I just went in and saw it. So I was even thinking a public offering of securities, actually. But yes, this is the type of thing, but there were numerous of them, but they read this similar way. So that I saw from the website, those screenshots also, I think, of the website that I took are, I know I gave those to Ms. Leonard as well, so those are out there somewhere in the documents, because I did do screenshots of the website. Not sure if I attached them as part of the letter I sent in September 09 or not, but these, I'm totally unaware of any of them. I certainly can recognize the settlement statement.
As a settlement statement.
Right.
Not as something particular to this transaction.
No. And I'm not going to attempt to read these on the spot here and give you some kind of analysis either. Unless you want to be here a very long time.
No, I'm not going to ask you to do that.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Now, what I can say is that what I thought Mr. Heldreth showed that day at that meeting that I'm talking about in November that we all had together was much more of a limited piece of paper with, it had maybe a lot less writing on them, and it was definitely looked like, invest your money, and it looked more like this kind of a thing, but with less writing on it. I didn't see it, only over the shoulder.
Words, opportunities, do you recall that characterization then?
I definitely recall the characterization, but I can't say from where.
Let me ask you some generic questions about the package you have in front of you. I'm not going to ask you any specifics.
Okay.
in a general sense, there's a first document that apparently is recorded in the Registry of Deeds called the Collateral Assignment of Rents and Leases. What, if anything, do you understand about the nature of that kind of a document in a commercial transaction?
I don't
understand what it is.
No, I really don't understand much about the commercial lending business.
Do you? There, partway through this, and these pages are not numbered, is a settlement statement. Do you understand what a settlement statement is?
Yes.
And what in your mind is a settlement statement in this format utilized for?
The context in which I'm used to the HUD settlement statements.
I believe this is.
And I believe this is too, but I don't want to swear to that.
I represent to you that this is a HUD settlement statement. Would you disagree with me that this is the kind of statement utilized in a commercial, in a real estate transaction?
Yeah, in a residential one that I'm familiar with, yes.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, in listening to all of the proceedings and everything, I was kind of surprised to learn that it was used in commercial. I really thought, for some reason, I thought it was residential exclusively, but that's my misinformation.
Also here is a promissory note, commercial construction loan, and I don't want you to comment about this loan, but I want you to give me your understanding of what that document represents in a generic sense.
A note from the borrower to...
Would you agree with me that a promissory note is a promise to pay a sum certain at a given date?
Right.
By to maker to a payee?
Yes.
Okay.
It's funny because my eyes went directly for some reason to this note is fully negotiable and upon negotiation will be enforceable by the holder in accordance with its terms. And I don't know if that is that normal language in a residential loan.
But in any event,
negotiable instrument, but
you recognize
yes.
this as a promissory
yes.
note.
Yes, I owe you.
What a note is.
Yes.
And do you have any understanding of what a commercial construction loan agreement is?
Not that I could speak to.
Okay.
I mean, I have a generic understanding only.
Do you have any understanding as to what a mortgage security agreement and assignment is as a legal document?
Again, generically, the fact that the mortgage is assignable to somebody else,
okay.
I would understand.
Okay. If I represented to you that a mortgage is the conveyancing of a security interest in real estate
mm-hmm.
or performance of whatever agreements. Can we please turn that off?
Sorry.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge,
okay.
yes.
Primarily for payment of sums pursuant to a promissory note?
Yes.
Okay. Would you also agree with me that a mortgage is granted in New Hampshire under what's called covenants or conditions of mortgage? Do you understand that? If you don't, that's fine.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I'm as I said, I'm not an attorney.
I understand, but I want to understand your understanding.
Yes.
I'm not going to ask you to comment on this.
Yeah.
If I represented to you that a mortgage is given to secure payment of a promissory note, to compel payment of real estate taxes on real estate to keep property adequately insured for the security interest value and not to diminish the value of the security interest. Is that something you would understand or agree with?
If that were in the terms of the contracts, yes.
Okay.
If that is by operation of law somehow, no. I don't understand that,
okay,
but if it's within a contract, I do.
It's important for me to understand that. Do you have any understanding is a what the term statutory power of sale mortgage means in the state of New Hampshire?
Yes, just simply because of this meltdown and this crisis, so I found out that we are a statutory power of sale state.
Do you have any understanding in a generic sense what an assignment of the mortgage would do?
You would assign the obligation to another person for some kind of remuneration.
A transfer?
Yes.
If I represented it with a transfer of interest in whole or in part?
Yeah, an assignment of anything legally is, okay. I mean, it can be anything, I would think. And the mortgage and the note, I, you know, always travel together. There are certain basic things that I'm aware of, but as far as the, you know, technical terms within, I'm not.
Fair enough, fair enough. I appreciate your assisting me, understanding your understanding of what these documents might mean. Attorney Spill.
Okay, so getting back to what you said earlier, you said that the items that you saw on the website smack of a security. So I glean from what your testimony is here today, you didn't perform any kind of formal analysis. It was just your sense that it could have been a security.
I had nothing on which to, this was initial whiff, if you will. I think maybe this bears further investigation because it sure looks like it. And that's, I had no documents and never have had any documents on which to base an analysis.
Okay, and you wouldn't hold the position here today that every commercial loan attached to a mortgage is a security?
It would, I guess, depend on the context of it. That's kind of what my understanding of the Reeves case was. It does depend on the context of it. I think it's important to understand when you're looking at the securities laws, which are very old and well vetted, and you look into the consumer credit statutes, which are very new. When the Uniform Securities Act was adopted in New Hampshire, there wasn't any first mortgage lending statute. Did or didn't the Uniform Act, and I think it's Professor Long that indicated that most of the states' writing of the Uniform Act did contemplate mortgages as securities originally, mortgage notes. The note, the mortgage itself is just the security, as you said.
You're referring to the Uniform Act.
The Uniform Act, right. And our act, I have 15 years, I had always been told from the time I started was a copy of Minnesota's, for whatever reason that was particularly grabbed. But even the non-issuer, that whole thing that kind of turns on the non-issuer, one could make the argument that issuer transactions were not intended to be covered in an exemption because they were intended to be covered by the law, because there was nothing else covering them, and banks did them. Very few, other than perhaps what was out in the commercial market, which I have no idea, and very few private mortgages were done. Banks had an exemption, so they would never have to register the securities or anything else. There's an isolated sale transaction that would have covered you and me giving mortgages to people. So it would have only been, you know, and I certainly wasn't around at the time to know, but if those private notes were being issued somehow, the Act, I think, may well have intended to cover them, both the Uniform Act and the Minnesota version.
You acknowledge then that our Act has been modified by the individuals that were responsible for enforcing it?
No.
From the 56 Uniform.
Right. No, I would not say that. I would say it was modified in Minnesota, and then that was the version that was adopted, and, you know, for what reasons, I don't know. I can tell you it wasn't modified in the 2002. I know there was quite a bit of discussion about that as well. Very simply, it was certainly discussed, the Nicuzel proposal and all of that. But it was the new version, which very few states adopted, did not look as tight or as investor protective. It looked more like an industry-driven bill, to tell you the truth. So, and it would take such effort to rewrite that and write all of the safety net that was in our own act back into it that it was not undertaken.
So are you aware or aren't you aware that the whole mortgage exemption was modified from the 50-section Uniform Act?
Yes, I am, by Minnesota. Yes, I am.
No, by the state of New Hampshire.
The state of New Hampshire, my understanding is, took the Minnesota Act. That's why it reads the same in Minnesota as here.
But you understand that it was modified from the 56 Uniform Act?
By Minnesota, yes, I do.
And New Hampshire.
And New Hampshire, by my experience is that, you know, when you're going, for instance, when we were looking for money transmitter statutes, we looked around at the various states and kind of picked one that we thought worked the best and then modified it from there.
Now, you said that it depends on the context of the commercial mortgage as to whether it's a security or not. Can you explain what context means in your mind?
Well, the context of who the investors are. Basically, are these big guys, are these banks and you know, large institutions, because that's, to me, what Reeves was saying if it, you know, these people don't need the protection of the securities laws, but that, in fact, they might read differently if you had, you know, less sophisticated people involved.
What if someone was a professional lender, a sophisticated professional lender? Would you say that that was a security or not a security?
I honestly don't know where you draw the line. You know, from my experience with securities, we always kind of drew it, let them, the burden of proof it wasn't a security fall on the other person, if we felt it was, and there were investor protection to be had.
I'd like to show her letter of October 13, 2009. It has the attached website that you referred to.
Okay, I did print it. All right. Yeah. I thought I had.
Can you take a minute to look through that?
Sure. Yes.
The SAFE Act changed and broadened the types of loans that would come to your jurisdiction in the spring of 2009 and July of 2009, correct?
In July 31st, 2009. The spring of 2009 did not change loans, did not bring construction loans under our jurisdiction. The one that went into effect, it was actually enacted the year before, and it went into effect April 1st. The July 31st is the one that changed all the definitions.
But the law that went into effect April 1st, 2009, changed the licensing requirements, correct?
Changed, right, that loan originators had to be licensed, yes.
So that if Scott Farah originated these loans that he's got on his website, he would need to be licensed as a loan originator, correct?
He would have to be licensed in whatever jurisdiction the property was in, if it was a residential mortgage loan. And as of July 31st, if it were a construction loan in New Hampshire as well. But if it were out of state...
And he was not licensed, right? At any time?
That is exactly what this says.
Right. For your letter.
Right. And they, I believe that when the law firm responded immediately, that he had, they undertook that he had ceased all such activity, and they took the website down.
Would you say some of these prospects for a loan were involved residential loans?
I did not see any, I don't believe.
Particularly the one about Plymouth. Christy was looking for a loan to allow her to build a home on this attractive lot in Plymouth, New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? It's about the third or fourth page.
Yes.
If she owned the property, she was building her own home to be occupied by her.
Right.
That would have been covered under the SAFE Act, correct?
Right.
Okay.
It came under on July 31st, yes.
So some of these prospects were residential.
One?
Well, I saw another one here.
You did? Yeah, but it says in... I did see a windshield one too on this story. 9 month bridge loan. Yes.
Yeah. That was residential.
Yeah. And ergo the letter.
I don't believe this is part of the record. Did you make it part of the record?
You've verified that that's your letter, and the attachments to it would be introduced because they accompanied this letter. Is that correct, Mr. Spill?
Yes. They accompanied the letter to Scott Perry dated 10/13/2009.
If Ms. Jurda will confirm that that's her recollection.
It's definitely in my letter. I know that I printed out screenshots. These don't look like screenshots, but I'm not sure whether. I definitely believe that I attached the investment opportunities, and I have no reason to think these aren't the ones.
Okay.
But I cannot swear by it.
I am going to accept that and pass that to you. This will be Exhibit 113. And I'll reiterate for your benefit, Ms. Jurda, that the rules of evidence technically do not apply here. And again, having heard from you your explanation of this, I will attach whatever probative value I feel is appropriate to what I'll be looking at in my deliberations.
Yes.
Are you familiar with Susan Ledoux? I'm sorry.
No. Are you going to refer to the same set of documents that we've just introduced?
I'm done with those.
Okay. Okay. Proceed, please.
Are you familiar with Susan Ledoux?
Yes.
Who do you know her to be?
A paralegal at the law firm of Gallagher, Callahan & Gartrell. I believe she's left there.
Did you have any dealings with her on a professional level in terms of financial resources complying with the Act, 397A?
I don't believe... I don't believe I did directly. In hindsight, when the whole thing came out about that little matrix that she with a flow chart she was trying to figure out as to what's a construction loan, I spoke to her about that and said, basically, wait a minute, not so fast. You do have to take some contextual things into account when you're doing this. But I had no idea it was attached to financial resources. Absolutely none. Until we actually saw it in your report. She had been trying to get this out. I had generally been deferring to our legal people and our general counsel.
Did you form an opinion as to whether you thought she was a competence compliance paralegal?
Yes, I think she is. Yes.
Can I just have 1 minute, please?
Certainly.
The letter that we just introduced into evidence with the attached website, you first saw that in September. That particular website was a different website.
I only saw one.
And that was the loan opportunities?
Right. That was the one that was mailed to me through a link from Peter Roth to Deputy Fleury, who forwarded it to me.
Entitled privateloanopportunities.com. I think
you have the email somewhere. I have the email. I have the email. It's whatever link was on that email. I just clicked on it. I didn't observe titles particularly. It was like, here, take a look at this.
I have no further questions, but we have some questions from Mr. Forsey.
Attorney Forsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Forsey, Attorney General. So you didn't need a password when you clicked on the raw email?
No.
I just have some general questions that I've been asked to ask you. Scott Farah had two computers in his office. One we understand to be for internet activities, and the other one was strictly for financials. Did banking remove any of those computers?
I'm going to defer to our examiners who actually you have here to, I wasn't there.
So you have no particular knowledge of whether or not computers were removed from his office?
I believe computers were removed from his office. I have no idea what or why. I know that we went in and the doors were all unlocked. They couldn't secure them and so forth, and there was evidence of tampering from afar, that somebody was accessing computers from a distance, so that we got concerned, and the FBI did as well. And so the decision was made to try to gather whatever we could to protect it, then to work on getting locks and so forth, the locksmith up there and changing the locks and so forth, which is what we did. And then returned all the documents and computers or whatever to the FBI. To my knowledge, nobody ever looked at anything we took.
And,
unless it was up there. Excuse me.
And most of which was taken was returned to FRA.
All of it. So to my knowledge, yes.
Were some copies of documents retained by banking and not returned?
In likelihood, but it would have not been from what we brought. It would have been done while they were up there. So in other words, they were doing their exam. They would have taken copies of whatever. And then when we said, look, there may be a problem here, they, you know, just physically removed what they could and put it in our locked storage area, and then took it back the following Monday or Tuesday, whenever it was.
And you personally never went up to the FRM office?
No. Right? Well, excuse me. I did with Mr. Spill.
Correct, but not after the collapse?
Correct.
Okay. Were you a member of the Real Estate Appraiser Board?
Yes.
What years?
I don't recall.
A rough test,
it was shortly after I got here, after I arrived over at banking, so 2002 or 2003, and I don't remember the year that it ended either.
Do you have a rough estimate roughly when it ended? Or?
Oh, boy. I mean, I would say 2000. 6, maybe 2005, 6. I don't remember. I would prefer not to testify on that. Instead, have you just look at the records?
Okay, sure. I just want to get a record. So you were there for a few years.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I was there for at least a couple years.
Okay.
The banking department's obliged to have somebody on the board by statute.
So there's still somebody on the board today from banking?
Yes, there is.
And what were the duties of the banking personnel on the board?
Basically, just to participate, I guess, and bring up any, you know, listen and bring up any issues that we saw. As far as, you know, I don't know, the trends or whatever, they basically license the appraisers. And then there's the other main function, and this is a very, very tiny, all-volunteer, non-paid board, except for one or two in office. It was just one at the time, I think, in office personnel. They actually handled all the complaints that came in on realtors. And so they kind of bifurcated. My duty was to hear any of those along with the majority, and then a minority would investigate. So you'd have one or two people that would investigate a particular complaint. And then if it came forth to an actual hearing, we had all been separated from it so that we could hear the evidence and make a decision. Never had a hearing while I was there, to my knowledge. I certainly never participated in one.
If you had learned about any disciplinary action being taken about any appraisers here in New Hampshire, would you take that information back to banking and just to compare to see if these appraisers are being used by some of your licensees?
I would have.
Do you remember specific instances where you learned of an appraiser losing his license and you communicated that to others at banking?
No, I do not.
Do you remember hearing anything about the Philip foreclosed matter while you were there?
While I was there, I don't believe so. It's possible. I was aware of us referring something. We had to work for quite a while because, as you know, the confidentiality laws at the time were the same ones that applied to banks, so they were extremely strict. There was no difference. Here's consumer credit and here's banks. You know, so you, obviously around banks, they're very, very tight. So we work, I know the legal people worked for quite a while on getting an information sharing agreement with the Real Estate Appraiser Board to refer something from a totally different case, a large public case, where I believe that gentleman had been involved in appraisals that had proven problematic. And I believe eventually that referral was made, but again, it was out of my hands. It's, we, in the banking department, we, I mean, you have the consumer credit side, you have the banking side, and then basically you have a legal department headed by general counsel, which was in effect when I got there, so that most of the legal work fell automatically under the general counsel, you know, not directly under my control. So I'm not, you know, necessarily familiar. That's why, for instance, things like what I pointed out initially, I had no knowledge of.
But if in your position as on the appraisal board, mm-hmm. you learned of a license being revoked in another state and the appraisal board was being made aware in our state, was there a specific protocol that was in place to make the relevant departments such as banking aware?
I don't recall ever hearing of somebody being revoked in another state. So I know that information is public, and you can go publicly and look at an individual and see if they have a license and or if it's been revoked. But not as part of the real estate appraisal board. I don't ever remember hearing of it.
I'm going to go off topic to another topic now, if you don't mind. Did banking meet with the bankruptcy trustee after the collapse of FRM?
I would like to say not to my knowledge, definitely not to my knowledge, and I would have to be guessing. I don't believe so.
The bank
yeah.
Nor do you have any direct knowledge of a meeting with any
no,
bank?
No, no, none. Not even vicarious.
Am I correct in understanding that personnel at banking was given a password to the loan opportunities website sometime in February of 2009?
To my knowledge, no. I don't know anything about it. No, again, the whole complaint thing, I heard about that just this morning when you were bringing that up. I had no idea of that. So, again, that's within the legal departments where most of the complaints are handled.
So they certainly could have been given a password, but you just don't have any.
I have no idea. No idea.
And you have no knowledge about banking giving that password to Peter Roth or anybody at the Attorney General's office?
No. No, I don't. I mean, what he gave me didn't require a password. Now, within each of these opportunities, if I recall, there was a place to click to get more information. And I probably that's where it would click in. But there was a place to click that you could go, that you couldn't go any further without, I think it contact FRM, or I don't remember at this point. But I know you couldn't go any further, but I believe there was for more information that led you somewhere.
So you're referring to the website that you were looking at in September of 2009.
Yes.
You remember a link
that's
on there?
That's the only time, yes.
Do you remember clicking
either,
on the link and seeing what was...
I believe so, but it may just be that it said contact for further information. If you want to hear the specifics, contact financial resources. I'm not sure. I thought there was a click through that didn't work, but...
So you have no specific recollection?
I can't remember, and it doesn't appear to be reflected on here, does it? That would be the
Do you see the link that you've seen in September 2009?
If I saw one.
If you saw one, so there's a chance you didn't have a link.
Yes.
As well.
No, it says please call Scott Fair if you have any questions. Would like to complete the package. Would like a complete package. Oh well, it says Dell synopsis and photos PDF. See that? I think that's a link. I'm on just the second page, the first offering.
Okay. Please call Scott Fair if you have any questions.
Yeah, but see that below it? Deal synopsis photos PDF?
Mm-hmm.
Full view package?
Correct.
I think that might have been a link.
But you don't have any recollection of what that link would have led you to?
It didn't go anywhere. I never saw it. So, and if it was a link, I would have tried it and I didn't get anywhere.
When you say didn't get anywhere, would it have been like can't find page or need password? What do you mean by...
I don't know. What do they usually say? I don't know. I don't recall directly.
Okay.
I just recall a dead end.
Okay.
In concept.
Just one moment to review my notes, Mr. Chairman. Do you know if the bank examiners in the course of their routine exams would have reviewed any commercial loans?
To my understanding, and I've asked them pre and post, to my understanding, they pick their own files to the extent they can as a routine. If it's a commercial loan, they would look at it and see it was a commercial loan and shut it. But they would pick their own to make sure that things were not misclassified or whatever, that they were getting everything that they should. Again, they can certainly speak to the procedures, but my understanding is that is the procedure. And in any place, they would pick their own files, just for the same reason, not necessarily for commercial, but just to make sure what was there and that it was accessible and, to them.
So let's say they picked one, and this is only if you have any understanding of it, let's say they picked one and it turned out to be commercial and mm-hmm. they shut it, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
Would that still, with the fact that they look at that opportunity or that loan, would the fact that they look at that be documented in their exam, or would that just be set aside because it wasn't commercial?
They wouldn't have looked at it other than to see if it was commercial, and if it was commercial or construction loan, they would have set it aside. They wouldn't document it. It would have been documented in the background that this company was also doing commercial loans. The fact that they picked up a file wouldn't have been documented, to my knowledge. Again, I really would defer to them.
If you have any questions, Mr. Chandler, I would ask if you could proceed, because I need to review a couple of things. I may need a couple of moments, and I think Jeff has some follow-up as well.
Well, I certainly have some questions, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a five-minute recess then, because mine are going to come at the end.
We appreciate that. Thank
you. So we're going to go off the record for about 5 minutes.
I'm going to get a drink of water.
Please be attentive. We're back on the record. And returning to the stand is Ms. Mary Jurter, and I'm sure I don't have to remind you that you remain under oath.
Yes.
Mr. Phil, you've indicated to me that you do have some follow-up questions.
I do, and I don't want to sound repetitive. I just kind of want to make certain of your testimony. I believe what you said, Mary, was that you had never seen a document, mortgage-related document from FRM, that you positively identified as a security.
Right.
And
yes.
The examiners didn't either.
I don't know what I said was, if the examiners had, I don't know that they could have recognized it. I didn't see anything like what is in this exhibit that you gave me that starts out with the investment and then has all the documents that Mr. Chandler asked me about. I never saw anything like that I never saw notes or any of those specific documents, trust, anything like that.
But
heard about them, but not.
And you, I think earlier testified, and this is just to be clear, the hearsay you spoke about was Peter Hilliard telling you he had found the security at that FRM. Or the packet was a security at FRM.
I don't think he ever said those words.
Did you look at the email?
Yes.
I believe it.
Yeah, this is the most accurate that I've seen. I haven't seen this email before, but.
Just so we know exactly what we're talking about, this is the email of Monday, September 16th, 2009, 12:34 p.m. Is that correct?
That's what I'm looking at. The Mr. Commissioner Hildreth's email.
Okay, so you don't recall hearing the word security from Mr. Hildreth, that he said the packet was a security.
Not that the packet was a security. I didn't know about the packet per se. I knew there were what he purported to be investment documents that had grabbed up there. They mentioned it that way. I'm sure we discussed it at some point, saying, you know, him saying it was a security and discussing whether, you know, well, they invested in trusts. I remember a conversation like that, and, you know, an undivided interest in a trust is usually a security, and a fractional interest in almost anything is generally a security, and that kind of stuff. I don't recall the specific, but we definitely had conversations
in
the beginning.
I'm sorry. The last part of your statement to the DOJ, that second to last sentence says, the sale of fractional interest and trust, even exempt from securities law, was subject to state anti-fraud provisions and subject to the federal securities law. Was that an accurate recitation of what you said to the DOJ?
Yes. I believe it was in the context, or at least the point I was trying to make, is that there's a difference between the banking laws, very significant difference between the banking laws and the securities laws. And that's the fact, if you're out of the banking statute, you are out of it all, including its anti-fraud provisions, which are actually quite new to the law. But if you are out of the registration or licensing requirements of the Uniform Securities Act, the anti-fraud provisions still apply. That tends to be somewhat of a general misconception, so I think I was probably parsing my words a little bit there to make that point, because, you know, usually say, okay, well, it's not in my jurisdiction. You know, they didn't have to register. It's not unregistered securities. You know, I've even, your examiner said that to us on another more recent case, where we don't see any issues of unregistered securities. And sometimes I think it gets lost that, okay, well, maybe they didn't have to be registered, but there's potentially another violation here. And they're still covered even if they're exempt. But I think that was the context of that answer, or what I thought.
But to be clear, you never actually saw a trust document from FRM that you declared as security?
No.
Okay. And similar to the context testimony that you gave earlier, not all trusts would be securities. It would depend on the context, right?
I think context plays a lot into almost any instrument, but, you know, because by definition, they all are. You have to have a reason to take them out. And if there's no reason to take them out, then they stay in. So by default, yes, all notes are securities. Is that a reasonable interpretation? Everybody has said, being courts and so forth, probably not. So therefore, what is the reason to take them out? And the court cases, I think, turn on that.
And I have, you know, some additional questions from individuals present today. Was there the decision to go Chapter 7 in bankruptcy, did banking play a role in that?
I had absolutely no role in it. That was between, I believe, the commissioner and the attorney general.
And was there a policy put in place by the commissioner or anybody at banking to send complainants or victims of the FRM collapse to securities, refer them to securities after the collapse?
That infamous meeting that I've mentioned several times early in November, or fairly early in November, early after the collapse, there was a consensus that we would all share and refer complainants so that we all knew who was complaining about what. So, you know, if somebody complained to us, we would refer them to securities and the attorney general. That was the understanding, and vice versa. So if you got a complaint, it might be in your jurisdiction. At this point, you know, the jurisdictional issues were all wide open, and we're trying to figure it out. And that was the only understanding that I knew of. I do think probably if somebody was purporting to have invested in something, that those would have been referred as well, but I don't recall any policy per se.
I've got one additional question I'd like to ask. Could you turn to your letter dated October 13, 2009? Specifically the second page, just this lending opportunity. Just have a general question about that.
Yes.
When is the first time you've ever seen one of these lending opportunities being advertised by FRM? Was it September 09?
I believe I answered that.
I don't remember.
This was the first time.
This is the first time.
When Attorney Roth forwarded that email to Bob Flory, yes, that's okay. The first time I ever saw any of this.
Okay. Is it possible that other people in your office, such as examiners, may have been aware of these loan opportunities prior to you seeing them in September 09?
I don't want to be facetious by saying anything's possible. I don't know of anything.
So you have no direct
knowledge
as to others may have seen this before you have?
No, I have no knowledge.
When you say, you referred earlier to WIC or Snap of the security, you were referring to the website?
I was referring to the website.
Okay.
Yes, just, you know.
In other words, it seemed like it, but you didn't definitively conclude.
No.
Okay, I do have some questions.
Could I elaborate just on that last
answer? You certainly can.
I think that's why this climbing out of the hole that I referred to earlier, quite often you'll put things in the positive and have them refute it. And that's what this letter was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Refute to me that you're not an originator, refute to me that they're not securities, or refute to securities they're not securities. That was the context. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
That's fine.
Thank you.
You present to me a unique situation that you have somebody that was with securities for a very long time that went into banking, and as I am attempting to analyze FRM, this gives me an opportunity to clarify things, which is really what I'm here to do. Is it fair to say you were aware that the Bureau of Securities Regulation had an enforcement action against FRM pursuant to their enabling legislation?
Yes, I knew of the initial, I believe the initial order was issued shortly after the commissioner left, but I was unaware of any action by the department subsequent to that. So we were unaware of a hearing and unaware of settlements and so forth, but I was aware of that initial unregistered securities, I think a cease and desist.
By saying you're aware, you understand that the Bureau of Securities Regulation had jurisdiction and was exercising jurisdiction in an enforcement action. Is that fair characterization?
Yes.
Okay. I wasn't going to ask these questions, but I'm going to refer you to page 3 of the Department of Justice summary, paragraph 1, 2, the third paragraph. It talks about FRM making a claim that it was a bank and could not turn over records because they were confidential. Was that claim made to you?
I can't remember if it was made to me or if it was made to Mr. Spill. I do remember some discussion and about the fact of what is really a bank. And honestly, we didn't know by definition if this could be a bank. And I think we called securities. Called banking. It was either me or Mr. Spill that called banking. I just kind of had that, the overall recollection of it, that they had claimed a bank security would be exempt. That was one of their claims.
Would it refresh your recollection at all if I suggested to you that there were testimony that FRM prior to 2004 actually had structured a depository account system for their clients?
It wouldn't refresh. I heard that in
but nothing listening. Of which you have personal knowledge.
No.
Is that fair to say?
No, absolutely nothing.
What licenses, if any, do you recall FRM had from banking?
They had a mortgage. I believe they had a mortgage broker license, which was ultimately upgraded to a mortgage banker license, which allows them to actually fund loans. And at one point, they had a small loan license, but never had any transactions done under it. I'm not sure what his being Mr. Farah's thought was in obtaining it, but usually if somebody's not using a license, we try not to let them hang on to it either. So at any rate, he did surrender that and, to my knowledge, did no business as a small loan lender.
But clearly, as being a licensed entity, you have jurisdiction.
Jurisdiction over residential mortgage loans, yes.
Okay. And that jurisdiction is exercised on a regular basis, I believe, 18 months apart by doing examinations. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any independent awareness or knowledge about the entity CLNM Inc.?
No. No, I know it came up, in hindsight, it obviously had come up in examination as well, if not two. But no.
Okay. If I represented to you that CLNM Inc. was a loan servicing agent,
mm-hmm.
should they have been licensed by banking for that service?
If they were servicing residential mortgage loans.
Okay.
Not for commercial.
I'm going to draw your attention to page 6 of the memorandum of your discussions. I mean, that's a long way from.
Yeah.
And ask you about halfway down page 6, it talks about an October 11, 2004 exam. And if I represent to you, number 2 talks about significant events. Number 5 talks about significant events on page 7. Number 8 talks about serious failures. Are those characterizations accurate based upon your recollection of your conversation and your understanding of that 2004 examination?
Yes, I believe that they went through it. I certainly didn't recall it in this detail, and asked me what I would, how I would, you know, describe these.
Okay. Now let me take you to page 10.
Okay.
And let me take you to the last paragraph of page 10.
Mm-hmm.
And the first sentence of that last paragraph of page 10 says, generally,
mm-hmm.
a company as sloppy as FRM in its record keeping should not be licensed.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your statement?
Yes, I believe so. Okay. I believe that one actually is.
And is that a statement that would have been articulated by you in 2007?
It was, I think, articulated through the referrals and my notes on referrals in from 2005 and 6 and perhaps 7. That's what my overall impression with the company was that it was sloppy enough and that it really crossed the line when it disposed improperly of personal financial information, and that it didn't deserve a license, but we never saw evidence of any fraud or that kind of thing. A lot of times, absent consumer harm, we did not see any consumer harm. Isn't that ironic?
Mm.
It wasn't visible to us. So if you saw consumer harm, you'd be a lot quicker to take their license than you would for, I think Mr. Shepard testified something to the effect of what he saw as largely paper violations. They were, but they were, you know, enough of them that it's like, you know, if you're not going to pay attention to the law, then you shouldn't be in the business. That's the general feeling that I had.
How do we get from 2007 to 2009 with FRM still staying licensed by the Banking Commission of the State of New Hampshire?
Well, I honestly think you're, in a way, asking the wrong people, and the fact that we did have people in charge of our legal department the whole time. So its movement within the legal department is something else that I can't really speak to. I can also tell you that, to my knowledge, what would happen was, because of the delays, it would be time for another cycle. And then you go, well, what do we do? Well, let's go out and see, at least see what it looks like now. Now, mind you, we haven't seen consumer harm. Because something isn't on a GFE doesn't mean it's not on the HUD. And that, you know, ultimately everybody gets the disclosures, just not when they should have, for instance. And it doesn't mean they weren't closing a lot of loans okay. I'm talking about residential mortgage loans, which is all we looked at. But, I mean, I'm not really sure how to answer that, other than we would go out and we would look, and if there, we actually did a kind of an analysis to say, this is the observations, this is the 6 observations in the, you know, 2000 and whatever report. And then the following report, we go through and, okay, how many of those are still there? And then here's a bunch of new ones. And that was kind of the pattern that took place. And each time they fixed it. So it kind of gets, you know, if you put it in the context of the time, with this mortgage meltdown and mortgage fraud all over the place that was visible, I think, you know, that's probably one of the prioritization was one of the issues with the stall. But it was stalled. And it shouldn't have been. Seems like that's a common theme here. It was stalled everywhere and shouldn't have been.
Do you have any personal knowledge as to whether or not any of the examiners from banking looked at files to make an actual analysis as to whether or not certain files were within their jurisdiction?
Yes, as I tried to say earlier, my understanding is that they pick their own files for just that reason. And we'll verify, okay, this is within our jurisdiction and this isn't. You know, they also present a loan list where we want to see those, and then, you know, I really would defer.
Okay. 'Cause
they can answer as to
Fair
what
enough.
They did with FRM. They really can't answer as to general procedures. But
now I'm going to go to page 8. and I am 1, 2, 3, 4. On the 7th paragraph down, an article in the Concord Monitor.
Mm-hmm.
As I read this synopsis of your interviews on March 17th and March 30th, I will say to you that that recollection and that paragraph and the one afterwards bothered me. Is it fair to say that motivation occurred as a result of a newspaper reporter's article of something within the jurisdiction of banking?
I'm not sure I totally understand the question, but I can also tell you this is another example. This page seems to be particularly loaded with them, because those email inquiries from Ms. Shaw to select, I mean, those aren't things that I had, or that, you know, I would have recalled like that. So I think this is filtered. This probably all is very true.
Okay, let me,
but I don't think it came directly from my mouth.
Let me ask you to read the two paragraphs. One starts an article in the Concord mm-hmm. Monitor, and this next paragraph an email dated.
Mm-hmm.
Just reread those and give me your current day view of what those two paragraphs mean.
Okay, do you want me to read them
all
or
not? Yeah, I mean, read to yourself now and then.
Those are not from my testimony to the Attorney General, as best as I believe, because I didn't, you know, I fully believe that this is accurate, and I fully believe that they probably had emails that said this. But again, it was from, you know, Andrea Shaw to Donna Susie, and from Andrea Shaw to Celeste Couture, who was our licensing gal. But I would say, yes, it did. I know in my mind it created a flurry when I read about it, because I kind of said to myself, there they go again. It's kind of like what I had on September 9th, there they go again. So I saw this as, oh boy, here they are with securities. I had no idea what had happened or not happened. I didn't know it was still a live case. I didn't know anything about it. But I thought, oh, I better, you know, securities must have seen this, you know, but I better, you know, here they go again kind of thing.
But your recollection is that these two paragraphs are not part of your interview on either March 17th or March 30th.
No, I think if you go up to, this is where that little narrative starts. During 2006, that's the narrative that I picked up that just, I'm sure it all happened, and it is my vague recollection, but I certainly wouldn't have known that. The during the 2006 one is really poignant, because I would never have known about something between the hearings officer and the okay. attorney for the counsel. But this is all kind of that same background, it looks like. It's not inaccurate, I don't believe.
Okay. I really need to understand that, because I have permitted to be introduced into mm-hmm. evidence any number of summaries of interviews coming out of the Department of Justice. And what you're saying to me is mm-hmm. those observations mm-hmm. made within those two paragraphs were not part of your interviews with the Department of Justice, but that being said, you don't doubt the veracity of those two. Is that
right?
Correct?
Right, because it says an email dated April 25th from Andrea Shaw to Donna Susie states that. I mean, that's true, but I didn't say it, but it's absolutely true. It's not, you know, it may be that the intent of these, you know, was to paint the complete picture. And, you know, they definitely put in here what I said, too, but it's not only what I said.
Okay. That's extremely important to me. And is it fair to say the two people who interviewed you were J. Christopher Marshall and Richard Head?
Yes.
Okay. I have nothing further. Any follow-ups from either Mr. Forsey or Mr. Spill? There being none, Ms. Jurda, I want to thank you very much for taking the time. Your testimony is very beneficial to me as I go through this process. Again, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
At this time, we have no further witnesses. We have asked a couple to show up here in case, but we have no intention of calling anybody else today.
To explain, the questions that we asked, Mr. Jarrett, obviated the need for us to ask the questions to the examiner. So we've got the information that we were.
I understand that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought I deferred to them on most of the questions.
That's fine. Well, I'm going to take a 5-minute recess. I want to come back. So it's 11:35. Let's be back here at, 10-minute recess. Let's be back at 11:45. We're in recess.